Well, I only talked to you like 5 minutes ago, so of course, sorry. It's been a long, 31 years. So, City Council will come to order. Today is Thursday, November 8th, 2012. Carla, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Are you enjoying the fine fall foliage color?
It is pretty out.
I think so, too. Can you please call the roll?
Leonard? Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed. Can you read the first item?
Item 1266, accept report on less lethal force recommendations, a policy and case file review conducted by the Taser Less Lethal Work Group of the Citizen Review Committee.
And would appropriate folks please come forward? Welcome back.
Hello. I'm Mary Beth Baptista. I'm the director of the Independent Police Review Division in the Auditor's Office. As part of the Auditor's Office, there is the Citizen Review Committee. It is a 9-member advisory body to both the Independent Police Review Division as well as to the Portland Police Bureau. As part of their work, they often break up into subgroups. One of those subgroups was the Less Lethal Force Work Group. Is that right?
Yes.
And the chair of that work group was Michael Bigham, and one of the members was Rochelle Silver. And I will turn it over to the two of them to discuss the report in front of you.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Michael Bigham. I was the chair of this work group, Less Lethal Work Group. Thanks for letting us come before you. We're here to present a report on less lethal force recommendations. Police, if you ask police, they consider tasers to be great tools. But if you ask someone like Dan Handelman back here, they'll say it's a weapon. And actually, they're both right. They're both tools and weapons. There are people that came before us that would like to see police dispense with tasers altogether. But they're a very important tool, and they are a dangerous weapon. And as such, they need to be regulated by strict guidelines. Our work group met over 2 years, reviewed available research in legal cases, interviewed members of the police bureau, the legal system, and the community. Our report contains 11 recommendations that we feel are vital to maintaining the rights, constitutional rights and safety of Portland citizens. I would just like to highlight 3 of our recommendations that we feel are most important. First, there's been a couple of recent court cases. One is Mathos versus Agarno. The other was Brooks versus Seattle, which in the Ninth Circuit now established new rules for police use of tasers, especially in the western United States. And they ruled that police must encounter active physical resistance in order to use the taser. Current Portland police policy allows officers to apply the taser if a person shows the intent to engage in physical resistance. This does not meet the requirements of Brooks versus Seattle. And our recommendation, we recommended that they strike the language of intent to. The proposed policy language is that they're proposing under the DOJ agreement is the threat of aggressive physical resistance. That's basically the same as intent to. What the court said was not threat of physical resistance, but threat to the officer. And there's an important distinction there. And we asked that the Bureau remove any verbiage that allows officers to use the taser without active physical resistance. In the period from 2006, when the tasers were started, till 2008, the city paid over $1 million in settlements and legal fees for taser cases. If you don't regulate the use of the taser to what the court recommends or what the court requires, then you're going to end up keeping on paying these court fees. We also asked that the language be applied to beanbag guns, that strike the intent to from that. Second, the Police Assessment Resource Center, which was your consultant, independent consultant to review deadly force, the Police Executive Research Forum, which is the police think tank started by police executives to establish best practices. And the city auditor's office all recommend a maximum number of cycles on the taser of no more than three. For some unexplained reason, the Bureau resists this change. But if you shoot 50,000 volts through a person and it doesn't work after three times, then you need to go to Plan B because it's just not working. And tasers put an immense physical stress on a person. And so the more you shock them, the more likely is that they're going to be injured. So I think that the three-cycle cap is warranted. Finally, we ask, as does the Police Executive Research Forum, that medical personnel respond every time a taser is used on a person. From a risk management perspective, this is a no-brainer. Tasers have the capacity to seriously injure or kill a person, and medical personnel need to respond to check them out. If you use force on a person, I think it's an obligation of the police when they use force to make sure the person is medically stable before they transport them to jail. I would like to thank the members of our committee, Rochelle Silver, who probably will have some words for you, and Lauren Erickson, who cannot be here. He's had a family emergency back east. Derek Ronke, who is there in the back, the Office of Independent Police Review, the members of the community that actively participated in the process, and the Portland Police Bureau for their openness and willingness to help in creating this report. And I'm leaving the CRC in a couple months, so I just wanted to thank you all for your support for the CRC. Congratulations to those of you that got reelected. And for those of you that are leaving, Mayor Adams, really appreciate your service over the years and your help. Thank you.
Thank you very much for all of your volunteer work over the years.
Yeah, I mean, you've been an absolute stalwart, steady, tough, fair member of the CRC and other processes related to improving our peacekeeping. So really, thank you very much.
Hi. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Rochelle Silver, and I'm a member of the CRC and a member of the Less Lethal Work Group. And I would like to take a minute to elaborate on the recommendation of having medical personnel show up at every instance where a taser is used. The chief of police will tell you that this has been tried before, and the emergency medical personnel are the ones that said it was not necessary to do, primarily because it was too costly. We strongly disagree with that. We know that it is a costly process, but probably lots less costly than having an incident go bad, having the city sued, and paying out thousands or millions of dollars to a person or family who was injured or died. Additionally, I think that it is unfair to our police officers and to the person on the other end of the tasers to have officers making medical decisions. Yes, it's true that officers have some training in this area, but they are not trained professional medical people, and they should not be expected to be. It also seems like a conflict of interest for the officer who has engaged in an unpleasant, perhaps dangerous interaction with a person, enough so that a taser has had to be used to gain control, for that person to have to be handcuffed, and then ask that officer to try to determine if the person is a diabetic, has a heart condition, or has any other serious medical conditions that would require medical personnel or the need to go to the hospital. And it's just asking too much of the officers. We ask that you don't put our officers in that position and have medical personnel do the evaluations at every taser event. Thank you.
Questions from council?
So you're suggesting that On the scene?
On the scene.
So a suspect wouldn't be moved from the scene until a medical evaluation has been performed?
Correct. And they already responded.
Emergency medical EMTs, paramedics, you're saying are not sufficient for that?
Oh, no, they are sufficient for that. That's what we're asking.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
They respond about half the time now when the probes are lodged in the person. But if they aren't lodged, then they aren't called to the scene. So,
I had another question. Appreciate this report. And maybe you're not the ones to answer this question, but I know we have representatives from the Bureau, and I was just asked this question today by a physician of mine, and she wanted to know whether we have epileptologists, physicians who specialize in issues around epilepsy.
Well, we have neurologists. And I think epilepsy falls into their specialty.
I'm wondering if they're involved in our training protocols of our officers.
I can't answer that.
You didn't come across that on your report. Okay, well, does somebody from the Bureau want to?
Before we get to that,
okay.
Right people.
But can I follow up on? Can I follow up on Dan's question on CRC recommendation 2012.3? Mm-hmm. This question about medical evaluation.
Right.
Did you look to the experience in other cities and how they handle that, or other jurisdictions, and did that inform your decision?
Yes, we did, and I can't remember. There are several jurisdictions that require EMTs to respond to every use of a taser, and there are some that are not. I can't recall right off the top of my head which is which.
That's in the record that
did
you?
It's a PERF recommendation. Let's see who PERF is again.
Yeah, Police Executive Research Forum, which is the kind of the COT think tank. It's a group the police put together to determine best practices.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take testimony now. Oh, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Hank, don't go in there, sir.
Wondering if you could talk about the difference between active resistance and passive resistance as part of your report.
Oh, sure. A passive resistance is like the perfect example was there was a case with Siskiyou versus somebody where people were protesting cutting of trees. And so they were linked arms sitting there, not actively resisting, but not moving or complying. And that was passive resistance. Active resistance is when you're up, you're being aggressive, you're pushing against the officers, you're fighting the officers.
So that's clear, and the policy says there has to be active resistance. Is that correct?
It says active resistance or the intent to display active resistance.
So is shaking a fist but not striking out, is that considered active resistance?
Well, I just give you my personal opinion that it would not be active resistance. You know, like, you darn cop, that's not active resistance.
Do we know how that's played out in use of force reviews?
I think that sometimes those behavioral manifestations are viewed as active resistance. And it's my contention that a clenched fist can mean more than one thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that every time a person clenches his fist, that means they're actively resisting and a use of force needs to be used.
I'll quote what the Bureau policy says right now. Maybe that'll help. Active physical resistance is physical actions of attack or threat of attack coupled with the ability to carry out the attack, which may cause physical injury. So not only are you threatening to attack, but you have the ability to carry it out.
Okay. And that's, you believe that policy is clear enough?
Well, but I think it should be narrower rather than broader.
So also remember, can I answer your question? I mean, as expressed in the next hearing, it's also the ability of a person to understand their own state of mind.
Right.
And to understand the request made by others has to factor into it as well.
Okay. And you have 13 recommendations in your report.
Yes.
Have you checked to see how many of these are included in our next hearing, the Department of Justice?
So, kind of ran through the Department of Justice, and I didn't see a lot of them that were included, to be honest.
So the opportunity there is the actual protocols, the SOPs, are not, those come later, but they're open for public comment. And one of the reasons we left them open for public comment is so that we could get your report and hear the conversation at council. So they wouldn't necessarily show up in every place of the DOJ report, but we are very interested in your comments to compare the draft TASER use policy with, and we will be doing that as well.
So these 13 recommendations will be reviewed in the policy piece,
right?
And that's where we would want to make sure we would have those discussions. Thank you. That's very helpful.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just have one more question. What does probe mode mean?
The TASER shoots two almost like fishhook-like things attached to wires into a person. That's called the probe mode, when they go into the person and stick, and then the shot goes through. Whereas what they have drives done, whereas you don't use the probes, you just take the TASER itself and put it up against the person.
I see. Thank you very much. That's very helpful that you've done all this work, and I do appreciate both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you both. We'll now take testimony.
Excuse me. I would like to approach the City Council.
No.
We have three people who signed up.
I'm going to do it anyway. It doesn't matter.
Sir, if you want to make testimony, you sign up. People have signed up before you.
All I'm asking, sir.
You need to sign up. There are protocols so everyone gets treated fairly, and you don't get any special treatment. You get treated like everybody else. Three people signed up in front of you, so if you can't do that, we'll have you removed. You have a choice. This is a body that takes public comment, but we're not going to take your public comment like this. So, sign up. All right, first three.
Dan Handelman, Kevin Takalo, and Nancy Newell.
Go ahead, Mr. Handelman.
Good afternoon, Mayor. I was wondering if I might have 5 minutes since there's not a lot of people signed up to testify.
Yes.
Thank you very much. All right. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and City Council. We at Portland Cop, I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch. We welcome the release of the CRC's TASER Less Lethal Report, which was originally completed in February but held up mostly by a bureaucracy since then. In addition to commenting on how this report intersects with the Chief's proposed directives, the DOJ agreement, and the auditor's November 2010 TASER report, I have attached our comments that were dated May 18, which are the orange sheets, about this report, and our comments to the chief about the proposed directives, which are this yellow sheets. And I'll note that many of the suggestions we made to correct the report back in May still have not been made, including that the over $1 million spent by the city have been defending cases about the TASER since 2002, not just in that two-year period that Mr. Bigham noted. And the most recent case we know of was the $258,000 in the Dan Halstead case earlier this year. We support most of the recommendations in the report, though we would suggest even more stringent restrictions on less lethal weapons, including tasers. The Police Executive Research Forum, cited heavily by both CRC and the auditor, calls for using a taser one time, reassessing, and never using it more than three times, which CRC would permit in exigent circumstances. The chief's proposed directive calls for officers to evaluate the use of the taser if it is not effective after two cycles. The auditor's report called for the use of the least number of cycles necessary to be used. The DOJ used the PERF guideline of evaluating after each use and calls on the Bureau to consider more than two taser zaps a serious use of force. We feel that the exigency escape valve is too vague and should be defined or removed. Then supervisors can evaluate violations of the policy on a case-by-case basis instead of leaving a loophole for officers. We're in full support of removing the directive's language around people, quote, displaying the intent to resist officers. Unfortunately, the chief's proposal turns the suggestion on its head by finding new language to say the same thing and letting officers use tasers if people make verbal threats or are, quote, credible threats. We believe this violates the Ninth Circuit Court's rulings that restrict use to when there's an active threat to safety, as you heard already. Hundreds of people have died after the application of tasers, including half a dozen in Oregon. These are not magic weapons. On that note, we support expanding the inclusion of medical response to people who have been subjected to taser use and are concerned about the Bureau's intransigence on this issue. The auditor also noted the PERF guidelines and other cities have medical attention go to victims of the taser. So the auditor's report lists which cities do that. We do not need to remind you that the now overturned discipline in the Chassie case revolved around the officers not getting medical aid to Mr. Chassie after he'd been tasered. It is of great concern that neither the chief's directive nor the DOJ report mentions the idea of tracking laser light only use of the taser. In addition to the CRC, the auditor mentions the PERF recommendations about collecting this data, and the Community Police Relations Committee, using input from police officers, agreed. We would add that if police are arcing the tasers, and I'll explain what that means if you want, to warn, threaten, or intimidate subjects, that should also be a required use of force to report. We also support CRC's calls to have less lethal shotguns that cannot also load lethal ammunition. Our suggestion would be to get rid of lethal shotguns from the arsenal, as we can't think of a single police shooting in the last 20 years where one was used. We support the recommendations by CRC about training IPR in mental health issues and documenting decision-making better. But since the IPR is one of the fact finders that decides if officers are in or out of policy, they should be recipients of training on the Graham standards and how those relate to the Bureau policies and not the trainers. We support CRC's call for more regular training on taser use, which was echoed in the DOJ report and the auditor's report, but not noticed in the chief's proposed directive. We support adding the restrictions to pepper spray directive to allow broad use against those, or disallow broad use against those with intent to engage in active physical resistance. On that note, we've been wondering how to get more young people involved in the issue of police accountability. So in a way, we have to thank the mayor and the bureau for brutally and indiscriminately pepper spraying the students demonstrating for their rights on Saturday, as you've created a new generation of activists. Since the CRC only briefly mentions that officers fail to issue or perhaps document warnings, we will add that we're very concerned the chief's new directive allows the use of the laser light, arcing, or other nonverbal signals to count as warnings. The reason for the warnings, as the auditor's report notes, is to give people the chance to comply with commands before having 50,000 volts run through them. While the Bureau's current and future directives speak about tasers as a means to end conflict without injury, an injury is defined as something that causes substantial pain. The entire attitude about using devices that keep officers at great distances from civilians to protect the officers must be rethought. It may be true that officers have a lower likelihood of being injured, but the impact of beanbags, pepper spray, tasers, and other so-called less lethal devices is still harming our community members. Thank you for your time.
Welcome. Thank you. My name is Nancy Newell. I've been a resident here for over 20 years, and I appreciate the council's efforts on this. I think it's way overdue. In that period of time, I lived in a neighborhood that was mostly people that were marginal as far as income, and expenses weren't as high as they are today. Our homes are now worth about over $500,000 a year. It's changed that much in our community. And what I've observed is that homeless people are treated on several occasions. I've witnessed mistreatment by the police. They were given a status that they shouldn't be given. A fellow with a shopping cart was stopped, and his personal belongings were pocketed. Jewelry was pocketed. I stood there and watched, and instead of asking what I was watching, they sent in a superior officer, and they moved me along so that I couldn't observe what they were doing. I reported that to the police bureau. There was nothing done. Nothing occurred as a result of it. I've been in demonstrations where people have been mistreated. A couple that was a gay young couple that were medical aides in a march were pulled off the sidewalk, which was allowed for them to march, and were hit and struck. And this kind of activity, I went to a neighborhood association meeting recently, and the officer was explaining what his vest involved and how many different uses on this very expensive vest to protect them. And there was an arrogance about his even questioning what the uses are, and very cavalier about his reference to the use of tasers and how it's used. And it seemed to me that he really hadn't been fully trained, and the audience that was there didn't appreciate his presentation. I asked him about drones and whether they're promoting drones in the city, and he said, well, yes, because we have drug problems, we're considering it. So, you know, I know. It's just like we don't have in the Northeast yet the reputation, I guess, to have reasonable discussion from a police officer visiting our neighborhood association that involves serious consideration of some of these. And I fully support Cop Watch's evidence of the problems that exist because I've experienced it personally. So I could go on with a list longer than that, but I don't think that I'm the kind of person that necessarily looks for it. I've been in demonstrations where I purposely don't look for those kind of problems, but they do happen, and I do like to be witness to it. And I think for the council at this point to really seriously change this, and I support Joanne Hardesty's culture relationship to this kind of activity by the police as a very valid statement and something to, after you are have left in your efforts, to further look into. Thank you.
When did the confrontation with the supervisor happen?
The supervisor, that was probably 5 years ago.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have drones. No plan to get drones. And as Citizen Sam, I would march on City Hall if we got drones.
Yeah.
So thank you
very
much.
No, I know. No, I meant, this was just about 9 months ago. I didn't know which one you're referring to.
No, I understand.
Okay.
I share your concerns about use of drones.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Thank you both very much. All right. It's a report. I'll entertain a motion to accept the report.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion?
Fritz?
I appreciate that the Citizens Review Committee has been working on these issues for many years, doing a lot of diligent work, and it's going to be very helpful as we move forward. Aye.
Fish?
Thank you for your thoughtful work, and Michael, thank you for your service to the city. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank Michael for his service as a member of the CRC, and thank Dr. Silver and Lauren Erickson also for their work on this report. And I think it's some very good recommendations, and I think we're going to be your recommendations are going to come up in our next session at 3:30 when we review the Department of Justice. So thank you very much. Aye.
Adams.
Thank you all for your great work on this. It comes at perfect timing with the draft protocols out for comments. Appreciate the comments made in the testimony. Aye. So approved. We're recessed for 25 minutes.